An estimated 1 million visitors go through the gates of the Iowa State Fairgrounds every year in search of food, amusements, and agriculture. Today, we're taking you with us to the Iowa State Fair. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Katherine Perkins.
And I'm John Pimble. This hour, we'll meet a legally blind painter.
Now I'm stippling the paint.
And a sheep shearing campaign. We'll experience cowboy-mounted shooting. Go to an ecumenical worship service.
Let's turn back to your bulletin.
And see the faces of Iowa's fallen soldiers.
Come with us this hour to the Iowa State Fair. First, this news.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm John Pimble.
And I'm Katherine Perkins. We're experiencing some of our state's culture at the Iowa State Fair. Coming up this hour, we'll remember fallen veterans, shear some sheep, and hear classically trained musicians playing original folk music.
But first, a special food made its first appearance in the opening hours of the fair, but this was not another gimmick on a stick. 1,500 volunteers assembled thousands of meals bound for malnourished children in Haiti. The assembly line process was itself an attraction. Rick Fredrickson was there for Iowa Public Radio.
Volunteers count off the ingredients as they fill one plastic bag at a time. A scoop of rice, a measure of soy protein, a spoonful of dried vegetables, and a packet of vitamins. Every once in a while, cheers erupt as a team tops off another cardboard shipping box.
We're going to be going 11 hours, 1 hour shifts. We have 13 tables each shift, up to 12 volunteers per table, so we can handle up to 150 per shift. And to stay on track, we need to do 9 boxes or 2,000 meals per hour, per table.
Dave Bradley is director of Meals from the Heartland, the Iowa charity that has provided millions of these rice casserole servings to hungry citizens of the world.
You know, what's really makes it worthwhile for us every day is when we hear the stories from the food pantries of the difference we're making right here in Iowa.
Each helping is 221 calories. Nearly 400,000 of the meals were consumed by Iowans last year. The Iowa Soybean Association is one of the main sponsors. Randy Van Coten is a soybean farmer from Linville.
Well, as a farmer, we feel like, you know, it's our arms, our duty and our calling to help feed the hungry in the world. A recent trip to Nicaragua, where a young farmer came up to me, and he's a father with 6 children. And he wanted to put his arms around me and hug me, because he said because of what we had done, we had saved his family. And that really, with tears in his eyes, it really made me feel good about what we do.
The production line is in the hallway of the Varied Industries building, jammed with volunteers wearing plastic gloves and hairnets. It's part of a global challenge by the International Association of Fairs to collect 20 million pounds of food. Iowa State Fair manager Gary Slater is impressed.
Of course, Iowa being an agricultural state and the Iowa State Fair showcasing all of that, I think it's just a tremendous, tremendous statement that we are the breadbasket of the world here in Iowa, and we are helping those folks that are less fortunate than us in other parts of the United States as well as other parts of the world.
One, two.
The one-day target was to assemble 250,000 servings. Meals from the Heartland reports volunteers surpassed the goal by more than 5,000. Perhaps a new tradition was born at the 2013 Iowa State Fair.
When you think about renewing your driver's license at the Department of Motor Vehicles, several things may leap to mind. Long lines, bad photos, crabby people. If you live in a rural area, you can probably add in a drive to another town. But the Iowa Department of Transportation is trying to change that. For the first time, they're allowing visitors to the DOT booth at the Iowa State Fair to renew their driver's licenses on the spot. Kiosks are set up in the booth at the Varied Industries building. They look like an ATM machine with a giant touch screen and a camera on top. If you're within 6 months of renewal, are between the ages of 18 and 70, and don't need to make changes to your address or vision restrictions, you can use the kiosks to renew your driver's license at the fair. Iowa DOT Director Paul Trambina says the machines are an extension of online renewal, which was launched in July.
This is the first year we have been developing the kiosks essentially since about May. And the concept and decided to let's really try it at the state fair. It'd be a great application to allow somebody, you know, allow people that just happen to be at the fair and also have the opportunity to renew their license and do it all in one quick, easy transaction. It only takes just a couple of minutes.
Customers step up to the touch screen, answer some questions, scan their current license, and step back to have their pictures taken.
Let's take your photo. Please listen to these instructions before touching take photo.
They hand a printed receipt to the cashier, pay, and that's it.
This has got your 800 number on it. After 21 days, if you have not received that card in the mail, make sure you call that number and they'll track it down for you. It comes in a plain white envelope. There's no markings on it, so you want to make sure you open all your... There you go.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Have a great day at the fair.
Or at least that's the idea.
What it's doing now is it's checking your picture against our database to check the dots pattern of your face to make sure you are who you say you are. Oh, it kicked you out for some reason. Let's see why. Let's go double check.
She's got a code. Have no speeding tickets or anything.
We're looking you up to see what that code is.
This woman from Maynard isn't able to renew.
Well, I was denied because I've only been married 22 years and haven't gotten around to changing my Social Security number to my married name, so it's still listed under my maiden name.
DOT officials say this is a sign the new system, called Real ID, is working as intended. And most people are pleased with the experience overall.
It's great. It's a lot better than having to wait in line like I had to last time.
It was easy. Yeah, way easy. Easier than going and waiting in line and, yeah.
Trambina says this is just the first step. It's possible you might soon be able to walk down to the lobby of your office building and renew your license using one of these kiosks.
We're just trying to get people to see that we want to come to them from a customer perspective. We want to make the transaction easy for them, and there's a lot of different ways besides online. You know, kiosk is another thing for us that we see here shortly in the future, where these could be in offices that, you know, can really function and make it easy for individuals. Because maybe somebody wants to do online, but maybe somebody wants to maybe update their photograph. Well, this is another means where they can really handle that task all themselves and eventually, you know, do the payment all right there. There's really no other interaction. It's sort of like an ATM. And we think that from a public relations perspective, that's what we'd like to say is smarter, simpler, and customer-driven, ultimately, and making it at the convenience of our customers.
And the line at the DOT booth may be the shortest one fairgoers encounter all day.
2 years ago, a memorial honoring Iowa's fallen veterans began traveling around the state. This week, it's getting its biggest audience yet while on display at the Iowa State Fair. This new memorial is part of an effort by two Nebraskans who want to make exhibits like this for every state. In the entryway of the Jacobson Exhibition Center is a 40 by 10 foot tall display with pictures of Iowa veterans who died in the line of duty. Inlaid on each soldier's military profile picture is a private image provided by their family with memorabilia, red roses, and handwritten letters. This pictorial memorial is called Remembering Our Fallen, created by Omaha resident Bill Williams and his wife.
We had read a story about a father who had lost his son, and his concern was that he would be forgotten. And so that's when we came up with the idea to create an exhibit of the pictures of the fallen, not to sit in a museum, but to travel from town to town.
In 2011, Williams and his wife made the memorial as a tribute to fallen Nebraska veterans. After officials from Belleville University saw it, they sponsored exhibits for more states, including Iowa.
You know, we have 10 exhibits now, and we've been notified of 4 new deaths in those 10 states just in the last week and a half. As soon as we hear about the latest fallen, we'll find the photo online. We'll run a picture of it, 8x10 or a 5x7, and then we'll put it in a frame and it travels with the exhibit. But after a couple of months, we contact the family and ask if they would like to have their loved one on the exhibit, which they all say they do.
Williams only includes veterans killed in action since September 11, 2001. It says he'll continue adding soldiers until the United States ceases military operations in Afghanistan. Bob King is the executive director of the Iowa Department of Veterans Affairs and says unlike most memorials, this one allows the public to see the faces of veterans.
You know, you go to the cemetery and there are no faces. But you walk down through here and there's Paul Fisher's face and there's Bruce Smith's face and there's Marilyn Gabbard's face and there's David Kirchhoff and Michael Deutsch and David Wyszynski. All people that I have an association with. And so it just, you know, brings the remembrance a lot closer to home. And so a lot of memories.
The memorial brings emotions to the surface for veteran Dean Kluse from Clarion. He retired from the Navy 14 years ago. Kluse is one of 10 Iowans being honored this year by the State Fair as an Iowan of the Day for his community volunteerism. Kluse says, after visiting the memorial remembering our fallen, being Iowan of the Day seems small.
Today, while we're here at the fair having a good time, there are people that are in harm's way that are potentially may give their life today for us to be able to enjoy these kind of freedoms. When somebody gives their life for their country, they should have been the Iowan of the day.
Kluse says this memorial helps people who haven't served in the military understand the sacrifice soldiers make. After the fair ends, the exhibit will move to cities throughout the state, including Cedar Falls, Council Bluffs, and Trainer. Music performed by the Iowa Military Veterans Band. Their performance from the Susan Knapp Amphitheater stage at the Iowa State Fair.
You're listening to Talk of Iowa at the Iowa State Fair. Coming up, we'll meet a painter who is legally blind and experience the drama of the sheep shearing contest. It's all still to come on this special edition of Talk of Iowa. This is Talk of Iowa from the Iowa State Fair. I'm Catherine Perkins.
And I'm John Pimple.
Evidence is mounting that fewer children are spending time outdoors. At the same time, research is demonstrating the physical, emotional, and intellectual benefits of being in nature. The Iowa DNR is offering some ideas for getting kids outdoors and involved in the natural world. But if attendance at a state fair presentation is any indicator, adults aren't all that interested.
Are you folks here for the talk? All right, come on up here. This is a small group discussion.
Former naturalist and outdoor enthusiast Austin Lambert spoke to just three families, sharing ideas for getting children excited about playing outside. Lambert says it's pretty simple.
Lead by example. Get yourself out there, too. You know, if you're sitting on the couch yelling at your kids to get outside, you're setting a very, very poor example for them. If you're the type of parent that goes out there and you do get involved in the outdoors, you do some hunting, you go fishing, kayaking, whatever it may be, your children see you do those things, they're going to more likely do those things.
According to a national survey in 2012, hunting license sales declined in Iowa at the same time numbers were rising nationally. The decline is bad news for wildlife programs, which are funded through license sales. Lambert says if you try to introduce your child to an activity like hunting, but they just aren't into it, put down the gun or bow and look for the beauty in nature that's close by.
Iowa has a lot of what I like to call micro beauty. It's looking very carefully, looking at the small flowers. You know, there's a lot of remnant prairies here in Iowa that are just fantastic. And if you go out there and you look in a 1 yard by 1 yard area and you look very, very carefully, you can identify over 20 species of flower just in that one little small area. And it's absolutely beautiful. So Iowa has a lot of that to offer, you know, from insects to flowers, all sorts of stuff like that, just the little prairie pockets that are just sitting everywhere across the state.
That's a message that resonates with Angie, a mother of three. She says she and husband Scott moved out of a townhouse to the small town of Elkhart in an effort to get their children outdoors. She says their half-acre yard has provided lots of opportunities to observe nature.
We've let things grow up like the milkweeds and coneflowers and kind of check on a daily basis to see what's living in our plants. And we discovered the katydid that was living in the milkweed for quite a while and then got to watch him molt, which was super, super cool. And found a monarch caterpillar and got to bring him in a jar, actually, and watch him go through his process of getting really, really big. And he's currently hanging out in his cocoon, and we think by the end of fair, he will have turned into his butterfly version of himself.
Julie is another mother concerned about getting her 10-year-old daughter, Abby, outside more often. She says it wasn't a challenge with her older son, but things have changed.
They just used to play outside more than as the generations have gone along. They just like to stay inside more and more, and that bothers me. So we're trying to find ways to get outside.
Austin Lambert says if a parent demonstrates a passion for being outdoors, a child can't help but share it.
My greatest childhood memory in the outdoors is my dad used to take us out to this little pond very, very often throughout the summer so we could go fishing. And from his perspective, he didn't really care if he caught a fish at all. And lots of times he never even brought his pole. It was all about me and my brother. That was the big thing. But there'd be days when we'd set the rods down and we'd go out and we'd look at red-winged blackbirds, which were, I mean, they're sitting on nests, so they were very, very brave and let's get very, very close. Catching frogs and different things like that, looking at these flowers. And now that's really what I'm all about when I do get outside is I'll take my fishing pole when I go lots of places, but I'm probably going to spend more time doing other things when I'm out there fishing. So I have my dad and my mother to thank for those things, and luckily they were very good mentors for me in the outdoors.
Lambert says he's still optimistic, despite poor attendance at the state fair presentation. He says families who did show up were obviously already doing a great job of getting kids outdoors.
The average attendance to the 10-day Iowa State Fair is more than 1 million. During the two Sunday mornings, there is a Catholic Mass and another service representing a broad base of Christian religious beliefs. On Sunday morning, 300 people fill Pioneer Hall for an ecumenical service, an event designed to be interdenominational. At the podium, Pastor Leroy Perkins leads the congregation.
Let's turn back to your bulletin, if you would, please, to the prayer of confession. Lord, some of us are here with smiles on our faces, even though we are hurting inside. Some of us are here to show our neighbors that we are religious, even though we don't feel very religious.
Perkins retired last year as a Methodist minister and now lives in southern Iowa near Allerton with his wife. She plays piano for the hymns. Leroy Perkins has led an ecumenical service at the state fair for 16 years.
We are very near the campgrounds of the fair where there are people that have been here for days. They're here for about a week and a half,
yes.
Sometimes 2 weeks.
Yes.
Are these primarily your people that come to the service?
A good share of them are, yes. A higher percentage probably from the campgrounds. But we've got state fair directors. We've got vendors on the grounds. We've got exhibitors in various barns and buildings, and we have people that drive in. One family talked to me this morning. They didn't know it until a year ago, and they came the first time, and they came in early because they wanted to get on the grounds and get a good parking place. And they said, well, there's a church service there. Let's go see it. And he said after they got done, they said they were coming back this year, and they did. And he said, we'll see you next year, too. And he said they'd been to a wedding this past week, and they told the young couple, well, you're going to the state fair the second Sunday. You need to go to church up there and take part in that. So maybe they'll be here. Who knows?
There are two Sundays during the fair, so you do two services,
mm-hmm.
both Sundays.
Yes.
What is it that this congregation wants out of this? What draws them to come to church?
Oh, boy, that's a hard question. I'm never asking what draws them. some will come up and say, oh, that was a wonderful message, and others don't come up and say anything at all. It's a beautiful location. You know, I know you're sitting on wood benches and they're not padded and the building's not air conditioned and all those kind of things. But I guess it's the companionship of being there together, seeing old friends, starting the day out in worship. That's the beautiful part about it. Everybody starting out in worship. It's a good way to start the day.
What does an ecumenical service provide that, say, a specific religious branch doesn't?
You know, I suppose that would be kind of hard to define, but to me, an ecumenical service is not pushing any one agenda, not pushing anyone. Each denomination has their own things that they push, that they have for policy and so forth. An ecumenical service is everybody sharing together. One God, one Lord, doing it all together, working together for the same end, and not trying to push somebody into something or pull somebody out of something, but just doing it together. And I think that's what people like, is just coming and not worrying about what somebody's going to say or what they're going to have to sing, just coming and enjoying themselves for an hour.
Essentially, it's a service in a barn here at Pioneer
yes.
Hall.
Oh, yes.
What is your message?
I try to do a message that's open for people to think for themselves, decide things for themselves, and not be pushy on it, not push any particular program or anything. Today, we talked about being a neighbor. Everybody can be a neighbor no matter what church they go to, if they go to church once a month or if they go every Sunday, whatever it is. We talked about being neighbors because we all need neighbors. We all need to be friendly. We all need to work together. It's a pretty tough world out there at times with our economics going on and with situations that happen in families with loss and hospital and so forth. And so if they've got something they can take home and share and have gotten something out of when they came to the service, that's what it's all about.
Leroy Perkins returns to Pioneer Hall next Sunday morning with a different message. He says he plans to be back to lead an ecumenical service for the 2014 fair.
There are lots of contests at the Iowa State Fair, but you won't find anything more dramatic or entertaining than the sheep shearing contest. A stage sits in the middle of the sheep barn arena with pens holding four lambs each behind four shearing stations. The lambs look and sound a bit worried. Big guys in burlap shoes carefully remove equipment from cases. These are much bigger versions of blades that look like they might be used for a morning shave.
Most of the guys are going to be using a 13-tooth comb with a four-point cutter and go as fast as they can and as good a job as they can do.
That's Rocky Anderson, a one-time winner of this contest and a former national sheep shearing champion. He's got the ring to prove it. Rocky is 55, from Griswold in southwest Iowa, and has been shearing sheep at the fair for 37 years.
There's a whole lot of winners here. I'm just one of them.
First up are the amateurs, and the announcer gets them started.
What are you saying, everybody? On your marks. Get set. Go.
There are only three competitors in the amateur and junior divisions. Smaller numbers that may reflect the fact that sheep numbers are down nationally and in Iowa. Judges are watching each shearer out front. Then once a shearer finishes a lamb, it's pushed through a chute, looking a little dazed, and judges look over the finished product. Mike Holdeman from Pella is one of those judges.
We judge for every little bitty nick that the shearers put on them. We'll judge them anywhere from a little bitty dot to on a tenth of a point to the length of the cut will be more points. So if it's longer, it's two or three or four or five, depending on how bad it is. And we're also judging on the second cuts in the wool, which is a little bit of wool that's left on the sheep, either tags or the ridges. If they leave it on there, then like 3-4 inches will be a point, and then 5-6 is 2 points, 7-8 is 3 points, just so the severity of what is left on and the quality of what they do.
So in this contest, the lowest score wins, and for the most part, the lambs are unscathed. With the first heat over, it's go time for Rocky, and he's got some stiff competition.
On stand one, the man of steel, from Steele, North Dakota, suburb of Bismarck, Mike Higgins. Stand two, we got Matt Kennedy, all the way out from Indiana. Stand three, past national champion Rocky Anderson from Griswold, Iowa. On stand four, represented USA last year at the World Championships in New Zealand, Alex Mosier from Larchwood, Iowa. So it's going to be a really, really, really good heat. Wool handlers ready because the wool's going to fly. On your marks, get set, go. Don't blink anybody because this isn't going to take very long. Rocky Anderson, come out of nowhere. Snuck up on him.
These guys are amazingly fast, taking off wool as quickly as the gatherers can scoop it out of the way. In just minutes, the first shearer finishes. Rocky and another competitor push their last lambs through the chute almost simultaneously. But as the scores are tallied and the names of the eight finalists are announced, Rocky doesn't make the cut. He's disappointed, but a very good sport.
The older we get, the more it takes out of us. I know some of us have been doing this for 30-some years, and the young ones are moving right up, so I think the guys that won it deserved it. I think quality was a big thing here today. Speed was a factor too, but quality seemed to be a major factor. So, and it always is, yeah, at this fair, quality.
Instead, it comes down to two young shearers, both from the northwest corner of Iowa in Lyon County.
Mark Hogendorn sees a chance. Make up a bit of ground on him. Got a good lamb, looks like. Their old arms start tightening up about now. They gotta keep breathing, keep relaxed. That lamb knows that they're a little tense. They're gonna fight you. But Alex Mosier's. This might be Mark Hogendorn's chance right here to make up a bit of ground.
And the winner is Alex Mosier, a 32-year-old professional sheep shearer whose family owns 900 ewes in Larchwood. He says his strategy for the contest was simple.
Shear them fast and shear them clean, same as every other day.
And fast doesn't begin to describe it. Mosier has sheared 423 lambs in 8 hours and travels the country, shearing about 25,000 sheep a year. He says they're not getting rich, but they are having fun.
The best part is it's physical work. You feel good, like you did a day's work at the end of the day. And people we work with, we enjoy so hanging out with each other. And it's also flexible. You can set up jobs on days you want to work and days you don't want to work. Just don't line anything up.
But there's no rest for Mosier. He's on tour and says he's hoping this winning streak continues through the Illinois, Indiana, and Michigan state fairs. Many people like to fish, but figuring out what to do with the fish they catch can be a challenge. The Iowa Department of Natural Resources is offering a tutorial at the Iowa State Fair to help anglers make the most of their fishing trips. Paul Sleeper is a fisheries management biologist at the Lake McBride Station near Iowa City. He and volunteers from MFL Marmack High School are demonstrating how to clean and cook fish for an attentive audience. Sleeper says plenty of people can catch fish. Cleaning them is a different matter.
A lot of people don't know the best way to do it. They struggle through, and then, you know, if you don't do it properly and don't take out, you know, get that fishy flavor out of them, and then they don't like them.
Sleeper and his volunteers dig through coolers to find fish to clean, and that's one of the most important steps, getting the fish on ice.
You're going to keep the fish. Probably the best way is just to put them on ice in a cooler right away. As long as you can keep those as fresh as possible will really make a big difference.
Sleeper says the next step is to get all of the red or brown meat out of the fish.
That's where all your fishy flavor is going to be. So when I'm done, I want to have a nice white piece of meat. You know, the other thing we show them here is how to get all the bones out of there too. Certain fish have a few more bones and they're in different areas. So we want to teach them to, you know, get out of there so there's a complete white, not a fishy flavor in that fish, and boneless fillet when we get done.
Just because they're a little bit, these have a little bit bigger bones. You'll hear it kind of fighting through the bones a little bit. Okay, leave a little bit on, flip it over. then there's that filet.
The filet is what you want to cook. And Sleeper says if you're frying, it's important not to overbread the fish. There are even free samples of the finished product, and they're delicious. Dale Demmer from Dyersville says he learned a lot from the demonstration.
Well, the main thing is with the catfish, how to clean them. That was the big thing. I didn't realize that you wanted to get the red meat out of the catfish, and I never did take it out. But yeah, that was the main thing I learned.
And Dallas Marley from Glencoe says this will probably encourage her husband to go fishing more often. And after tasting the fish,
that's a good thing.
Well, I love her, but I love the fish. I spend all day out on this lake, and hell is all I catch. But today she met me at the door, said I would have to choose. If I hit that fishing hole today, she'd be packing all her things and she'd be gone by noon. Well, I'm gonna miss her.
You're listening to Talk of Iowa at the Iowa State Fair.
Coming up, we meet a famous quilter and a blind painter. Talk of Iowa continues on Iowa Public Radio from the Iowa State Fair.
It's Talk of Iowa at the Iowa State Fair. I'm Katherine Perkins.
And I'm John Pimple. Last February, a bacon festival in Des Moines sold out its 8,000 tickets in less than 5 minutes. Bacon is popular in Iowa. To learn more about the appeal of bacon, I'm in the Agriculture Building for the Bacon and Ham Judging Contest, where 10-pound slabs of bacon are evaluated by judges. These judges are supervised by Iowa State University Meat Extension Specialist Joe Cordray. Cordray says bacon isn't just an Iowa thing.
We used to think of bacon primarily as being a breakfast item, that you would have bacon at breakfast. But bacon is used mostly now as a condiment. It's used on all kinds of sandwiches. It's used on salads. It's used as a component of many dishes. There's candies made out of bacon. So bacon is a very versatile meat, and we're using it in all different types of meals, not just breakfast anymore.
Why is it appealing?
Oh, because it's a very flavorful product. It's very smoky, very flavorful.
How has bacon production changed in the last, say, 10 or 20 years?
One big change that has happened, we used to have just one type of bacon made, produced. Now we have lots of different flavored bacons. If you look out there, there'll be applewood smoked bacon, there'll be maple flavored bacon, Cajun seasoned bacon, red pepper bacon, black pepper bacon. So there's lots of different ways that bacon is seasoned now, and that simply has increased the versatility of bacon and increases the way different people can use it. And so people can have bacon day after day, but yet it doesn't taste the same because of the different seasonings that are put on it. And those seasonings can either be sometimes incorporated inside, interior into the product, or more common, they are topically applied. But you'll see out there real attractive bacon that may have red pepper on the outside, or the various spices associated with Cajun, or coarse ground black pepper.
When I go to look for food in a supermarket, I don't often see this bacon from Lockers.
Most of the time, in order to produce this slab bacon or purchase this slab bacon like this, you need to go to one of the local locker plants located throughout the state of Iowa. Most of them have slab bacon available for sale. Most of the bacon that you'll find in supermarkets has already been sliced and packaged. But you'll still see in there some of it will be thin sliced, some of it will be thick sliced, and you'll see the wide variety of flavor profiles also in the supermarkets.
The judges evaluating bacon at this contest score the meat on a scale of 1,000 points, 500 of which are based on taste. Cordray says he has many favorite combinations of bacon.
I like bacon everywhere. I love putting bacon on salad, bacon bits on a salad. I also really like putting bacon on a sandwich. Nothing's better than a slice or two of bacon on a hamburger. Bacon, lettuce, tomato sandwich, great.
The State Fair's Fabric and Threads Department has brought an Iowa native turned famous quilter to the fair to teach classes.
So, what you do is you cut your 13-inch square, and the way that I arrived at this size for that piece was that you measure the circumference, which we're not going to get into all the detailed measurements, but it's the circumference
times the width.
Five women are crowded around Patrick Lowe's, learning how to make a jack-o'-lantern placemat. It's a circle, which is somewhat unusual, and Lowe's is showing the quilters how to do a continuous binding, a technique even some of these veterans didn't know. He's full of advice.
Because once you stretch that, that stays stretched for a while. Like if you've made a garment that's on the bias, if you make a dress or a skirt that's on the bias, you don't want to hem that until you've let that hang for a good 24 hours because all the stretch in that bias.
Lowe's grew up on the south side of Des Moines and started out in theater, acting and designing costumes. A shop in Valley Junction and a pattern that sold well led to fabric design.
Quilting just over the past, since I've been involved in it anyway, over the past 20 years, we've seen an evolution of color. Color has become more important in quilts. It's not, everything isn't hunter green and burgundy anymore. It's nice, bright lime green and purple, and people aren't as afraid to use color. So because that's sort of a trend in the industry, people are turning to me for that because all the fabrics that I design are very colorful and bright.
Fabric led to quilt patterns, a magazine, books, and video tutorials. Now he has his own studio in Phoenix. As we sit down to talk, he keeps getting interrupted for autographs.
Okay, I'll figure it out. That's
easy. I got to at least take your picture so I can send it
to
his
friend.
I was going to have him take the picture.
There you go. Yeah,
I don't know. We could use this between us. Together. Yes, and I'm going to say, Karen.
She got the library.
Me.
What's your name?
Lenora. L-E-N-O-R-A.
Judy from Casey came to the fair specifically to work with Patrick, because she likes his designs.
I came down hoping to be able to take the class, and the morning class was full, and they said if he does an afternoon one, and so we signed up.
So what is it about his work that you like?
Well, it's kind of fanciful, but it looks professional at the same time, and I think my grandkids will like it when they see it.
Dorothy Fadley, superintendent of Fabric and Threads, says she was thrilled when Lowe's offered to come and teach.
His associate had contacted the fair saying they wanted to come teach classes, and I thought, wow.
She says it's worked out quite well.
People that have attended his classes have just had a marvelous time, and they have been most appreciative of his knowledge and his creativity, his personality, and what he's contributed to the fair this year.
Lowe says for him, it's a homecoming.
You know, I try to get back every year for the fair, but it doesn't always happen, and last year I was back and my partner and I were talking about how, you know, I really should be coming up here and doing some teaching or things. We found the quilting exhibit last year and it was just really cool to see all the different the quilts and all the fiber arts here in Iowa. I've always thought of Iowa and Des Moines in particular as a really thriving art community, San Francisco of the Midwest kind of, and I wanted to be a part of that again.
Patrick Lowe's is teaching classes at the Iowa State Fair through Friday.
In the fair's cultural center, painter Elsie Monty is mixing different colors of oil paint.
So this is kind of a very dark brown, and I want to lighten that up with some yellow ochre.
Monty is a blind painter who for more than 30 years has painted landscapes. She spent a day at the state fair this year demonstrating her talent for Very Special Arts, or VSA, a group with the mission of highlighting the artistic abilities of people with disabilities.
Now I want some bright yellow so I can lighten up the browns.
Because Monty is legally blind, she puts her face as close as possible to the color palette.
I'm standing, about 4 feet from you. How well can you make me out?
No details at all. I just see just your hairline, not necessarily your facial features. I can see you have a gray shirt on. Your hair's kind of auburn. I would not be able to recognize you if I was walking down the street.
Monty is studying a photograph of an evening landscape with a magnifying glass. She's painting the scene on a 2-foot-wide canvas. Monty is one of several disabled artists from the Iowa chapter of Very Special Arts working at the fair to demonstrate their skills.
We want people to understand that being disabled isn't a life-threatening kind of a thing, and we try very hard to make a positive impact on the public so they get rid of these misconceptions.
What are some misconceptions that people have?
Well, some people think that all people are who are blind can't see at all. They think that they see tones of gray, tones of light. They just think it's a terrible dark abyss that they are in. And so for me, to help people realize that you still have a life after blindness, you know, that's really important, because a lot of people go blind, especially in older age. And so for them to see another person who is positive about themselves is really important.
How many years have you been with VSA, do you think?
I've been here about 20 years. And I had some arts training in college, in just simple teacher's art for education. And when I came to Iowa, I decided to get my teaching certificate in very special art. I mean, in arts, the arts. And so I went back and to Drake University and took some college credit.
What year was that?
I was went to Drake in 86 and 89.
And where did you land for your teaching positions after that?
I landed a position with the Department for the Blind and Very Special Arts in the Art for Schools program.
Monty also works with the American Council of the Blind and organizes an annual national art exhibition of work created exclusively by blind people. She says working with these organizations is important because she believes all disabled people should have an opportunity to display their work. As for her own work, Monty's goal is to finish a series of oil paintings of landscapes from each state. So far, she's completed 40. The painting she's working on at the Iowa State Fair is based on a picture of Lake McClellan in Texas.
Now I'm stippling the paint so it looks like bushes or grass. And I'm just taking my brush and bouncing it up and down on the painting.
One of the fastest growing equine sports in the nation is showcased at this year's Iowa State Fair.
So are you ready to have a little fun again one more time on a Friday afternoon? It's mountain shooting time.
In the Jacobson Exhibition Center, a crowd is watching riders shoot balloons using two 45 caliber pistols loaded with special blank ammunition. Barrels with red or white balloons sticking out of the top set the pattern. Riders shoot white balloons first, round a barrel, then shoot the red balloons. The fastest time wins.
Hey, how about home, Iowa? How about it?
The audience sees newcomers to the sport, as well as world champion Chad Little, a 25-year-old from St. Michael, Minnesota. Little has been shooting for about 13 years.
Anytime you can combine guns and horses, it can't get any better than that.
And Little's not the only athlete demonstrating his talent. Horse Jax does his fair share, too.
This particular horse that I've got right here, my girlfriend actually has been riding, but he's already won about 30 or 40,000 in the mountain shooting. He's 9 years old, and he's got a big future ahead of him.
Well, those are specially loaded blanks. They reach out about 15 feet.
The demonstration impresses Karen Hudson of Indianola.
I just like watching the horses run, and the idea that they're shooting and actually hitting something while their horses are going at that speed is amazing.
She's encouraging her husband Larry to take up the sport.
I've done shooting in the past, but nothing on horseback, so now we're getting used to the idea of maybe catching up a couple horses and having at it.
And that is exactly what organizers of this demonstration are hoping for. New recruits inspired by the Cowboy Mounted Shooting Association motto, raw horsepower, hard riding, straight shooting.
All right, watch them now. The reins are going to drop as he rounds the barrel. Here you go. Head on.
Thank you.
The new band, The OK Factor, combines folk, alternative rock, and modern classical music. The band consists of two recent Luther College graduates who are moving around the country, but they return to Iowa for a few days to perform at the state fair. During their first 2 years of studying music at Luther College in Decorah, violinist Carla Dittmeyer and cellist Olivia Hahn rarely spoke to each other, but the two became friends their junior year and quickly realized they had a lot in common musically.
That first time in the practice room, when I brought a tune to Carla, I was like, hey, listen to this, and she just instantly started adding and playing with me, and I was like, how have we missed out on this?
Hahn and Dittmeyer developed the sound for The OK Factor during their senior year. After graduating last May, they moved to Minneapolis to explore a new music scene. In 2 weeks, the duo is moving again. Hahn is going to Memphis and Carla Dittmeyer to Georgia, but their hard work this summer paid off. Dittmeyer says for the first time they're using a manager to push the band forward.
So he's going to help us sort of get the gigs that we want to get, like college gigs, which would be easy for us to do. You know, I have a job in Atlanta waiting for me, but I can get away on the weekends. And so
Atlanta to Memphis, what did we say, nine hours? Yeah, so it'll be a challenge. A challenge we're willing to work through, though. We don't want to give this up. We have so much fun, and this just is natural. Our classical training has helped us get to where we are, and now we can play out of the box. And
for me, it's a lot of the bow gestures from classical music, the dynamic range from classical music.
This is a different genre, but you still have to shape the phrase. You still have to use dynamic contrast, and a lot of the accents are the same. And so we draw from that. I mean, we've both been playing since we were 4 and 5, and that stuff doesn't leave you, and it shouldn't. I don't think a lot of what we do, the classical influence just kind of melds into the folk genre.
Cellist Olivia Hahn and violinist Carla Dittmeyer say they are in the process of recording new music with the goal of releasing it in December.
Thanks very much for joining us for this special edition of Talk of Iowa from the Iowa State Fair. I'm Katherine Perkins.
And I'm John Pimble. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese, Emily Woodbury, Sarah Bowden, and Ben Stanton. The executive producer is Katherine Perkins.
Enormous credit for this hour's production goes to John Pimble. Talk of Iowa is hosted by Charity Nebbe. We welcome your comments. Email us at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org.
You can see pictures from the fair on our Facebook page and our website, iowapublicradio.org. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio.